KUJZ 95.3 The Score, your exclusive home for Oregon Duck football, men's basketball, and baseball. We are KUJZ 95.3 The Score.
And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
What'd I win?
Live from the Papa John studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. That's gonna be cool.
Are they gonna bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Yo! Welcome to a Thursday. It's our final show of the week. What a week I'm having! No sports talk or crunch time tomorrow. Because right around now, we'll be finishing our pregame show from Sam's Place.
It'll be done.
Turn it over. Oh yeah, technically we'll have been... By now we'll have a laptop shut off and a couple of wires unpacked and just... Done! Getting ready for the Pac-12 championship game from Santa Clara. It's a see you wouldn't want to be ya dunk. Today, we're going to commence the festivities in about 7 minutes, talking with the host with the most, Mike Yam of the Pac-12 Network, Aaron Fentress, Double Dip Fentress. He'll be at Levi Stadium tomorrow night. He'll be in L.A. for Seahawks-Rams Sunday. I just realized that's not back-to-back days. All right. So, as a matter of fact, if you have Fentress's gig where you cover them both, that's perfect. I mean, you know, I have to tell you, being a Bay Area guy, San Jose guy, getting from a flight from San Fran to L.A., what was it, like 1,000 of them? So he would have... Although, I think it's a 1 o'clock game.
Well, the San Jose airport is also much closer because, again, the Niners, while they are the San Francisco 49ers, they play in Santa Clara. So, yeah, you could drive 40 minutes out of your way to San Francisco. It might be slightly cheaper.
That's what I was going to ask
you. The San Jose airport is, it's not worth the 45-minute drive. It's just, if you can get a flight out of San Jose and you're going to be in Santa Clara, you get the flight out of San Jose.
And
they fly over the stadium as you land, depending on which way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
San Jose Airport, describe it. I mean, here's my baseline. Wow. I've been to San Francisco, and I've been to Eugene. Is it in the middle, or is it lean more towards a big city airport?
It is closer to SFO. I've been to SFO more recently, and it's just kind of like bigger and shinier, and it's kind of, San Jose's airport is the same way, where it's like, it's a lot of big windows, a lot of natural light, a lot of the lighting at the top, like very, very high ceilings in this airport as well, where a lot of light comes in, the lights at the top, you know, it looks very natural and open. You've got your shops and things going around. There are birds that fly around the San Jose airport, which
really?
Apparently they're totally okay. I don't know if that's something that they were just like, can we figure out a way to keep
birds?
We have so many doors that are open all the time in an airport, and there's birds around, and they get inside. Can somebody tell us that it's okay? And they have a little like a key, not a kiosk, but like a little like plaque thing that's in the airport that's like, you might be seeing and hearing birds chirping. Trust us. We've talked to one guy who said it was okay.
Just dawned on me after, you know, traveling from Eugene for nearly 30 years. Is there a direct flight? Could you fly from Eugene to San Jose?
You could. Alaska Airlines offered that flight for a while, which was super useful when I was...
For you?
Well, yes, for me, but for also a lot of the people, like, a lot of people say they're from the Bay Area, and you're like, oh, okay, it's kind of all over the place, but, like, it's a lot easier to get to the East Bay from San Jose than it is, like, the Oakland Airport or San Francisco, and you gotta go across bridges or all the way around the bottom of the bay, and, like, anyways, there used to be a flight directly to San Jose, and the airport opted instead to take a direct flight to Chicago. which I was very mad about at the time. Still mad about, because now I have to drive up to Portland or fly into San Francisco, which is kind of an inconvenience because my family lives in San Jose and I don't like asking them to drive 90 minutes round trip to pick me up.
I don't blame you. Even though my family's from there, with traffic, you're right. That's an hour and a half round trip. As the crow flies, it's not that far. It's just pain in the ass.
They look very close, and you're like, okay, maybe if you land at the right time, I fly on a weekend, the traffic won't be so bad. But it's like, well, if, like, one of my friends is getting married in January, and I'm like, well, I think I'm gonna have to fly I'm gonna have to drive up to Portland in the middle of the night to get up there to make my flight that's early in the morning so I can land in San Jose, as opposed to taking a later flight out of Eugene but having to land in San Francisco. And like, do I rent a car? And that seems weird. And I don't want to ask anybody to pick me up because, like, with traffic, that's an hour each way. It's not fun. It's not fair.
And
driving is not an option either.
Uber and Lyft. I've gotten one ride when I went back east, and it was such a pain in the ass because, first of all, you have to have been to Newark Airport to understand. It's like a circle. It's like that scene in European Vacation where they just keep going in a circle and a circle and a circle. And there was also a scene with Annette Bening in The American President where she was on DuPont Circle and just keeps going round and round. You could miss it, but you circle right back. And then if there's a lot of traffic, you might miss it again. Yep. And I was literally out in traffic because my sister also, I had forgotten, I'm looking for a car that she no longer owned.
Oh, that's helpful. That's helpful.
And by the way, the difference between like a maroon van and like a two-door kind of Lexus.
Right. So oh, big difference. Right. Even the color alone is a thing. Right, it's just like, you know, you can't like.
So, and she had the van for like 6 years.
Oh, yes.
So I was in it. I drove it and I'm looking for that. Oh, by the way, I'm in a different car.
Oh, thanks.
Just if the silence could have been determined on the seething scale. And I always look at it in life as in 15-minute increments. So if I'm going to take a 35 to 40-minute trip, and now I'm BSing around 15 minutes where I could have already been in the Lyft.
Oh,
it's like, you owe me 20 minutes of your life, and I'll take cash. So anyway, welcome. Wow. Is that the record for us getting sidetracked to start a show? We didn't beat a minute.
You didn't even finish talking about the rest of the you got to the prepping for the show. You got to the bottom of this hour when you said Fentress would be on double dipping airports.
All right.
Hey, talk about airports.
Airports.
Following that up with the lightning round, Aaron Fentress, and what I'm calling the Stephen Nick three pick.
All right.
Because it rhymes.
Yeah, we've got things going on today. Mike Gam, then Aaron Fentress at 3:30, then a lightning round at 3:45, then at 4:30, Lee Sterling, because we're not going to have a show tomorrow. Then at 4:45, the Stephen Nick three pick from our friends at the new sports app from the Oregon Lottery. And by then, I'm just going to be taking a nap. So you guys are free to do move about on your own. I also want to do a digression later. My wife and I took the time and saw the movie yesterday. Really, really, I'll say charming and intriguing, and I would never do a spoiler alert for a movie that was so recently released, but there were about two parts of that movie where I was like, oh, that was so cool. But for now, we're going to lock up the Oregon fuel injection hotline on a semi-Friday. By the way, you could always feel free to text us 321-0824 as you guys frequently do and amuse me to no end. But right now, we'll lock it up. Talk some Pac-12. He and the crew will be on the scene in Santa Clara for the conference championship. He, of course, your host with the most, who beyond all the great programs he hosts for the Pac-12 Network. Also, check out his Give Me a Sense podcast. He is always repping Fordham, Go Rams, and the 201 in Jersey on Twitter at Mike_Yam. Mike Yam, my friend, how are you?
Doing great, Steve. Always good to be on with you, and it's obviously an exciting time for Oregon fans, same for Utah fans. I know the conference is happy that there's potentially a playoff team, so all is good, and I guess it's we've been waiting months for tomorrow. We finally get a good championship game.
You know, if 6 weeks ago somebody had told me there's going to be one coaching change in this league and it would be Washington, I would be like, why you got to make stuff up just to stir the pot? So, Mike, you're there at the epicenter of this conference. So from your chair or what your colleagues are saying, what's been the reaction to Chris Peterson stepping away?
You know, I think all of us were pretty surprised. I did not anticipate this happening. That said, I think Jimmy Lake's going to do a great job. But I can't help but think the conference just took a little bit of a hit. And it's no disrespect to Jimmy. It's just the amount of respect and admiration I have for Chris Peterson. I always felt like CP was a top five coach in all of college football. I've made this argument before. Give me Chris Peterson, and I know some people will call me crazy, over Urban Meyer, over Nick Saban. And I would only just point to this. He's never had the resources that those guys have had, and yet all he's done is continue to turn out winning seasons. I know this year wasn't what Washington fans had anticipated, but the job and the legacy of Chris Peterson, I can't imagine. I mean, Steve, you know this. You and I are both Jersey guys, but I think you've been on the West Coast for a really long time. It's been 8 years for me. I can't imagine the sport, specifically on the West Coast, without Chris Peterson. To me, his legacy is absolutely huge. Disappointed that he's not going to be in Seattle anymore coaching that team, but I do think Jimmy Lake is going to do a terrific job and would have been one of the hot names being thrown out there at the end of the season to fill someone's coaching vacancy.
No doubt about it. And then you had the announcement from Mike Bone at USC that Clay Helton, who was on the hottest seat, will be back for at least a year. Would I be off base in saying he's got some incredibly talented young guys? He kept him in the South race for sure until the final day. But if a year from now, Mike, they're in the Cheez-It Bowl, that his job will be in real, real jeopardy.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And look, I don't know what you put on social media. I know you're pretty active. And you spend a lot of time watching what everyone's doing around the country. But the social media hate in my mind for Clay Helton is so misguided. I don't know if I'm in the minority or not, but I love the fact that Clay is back next season. His guys never gave up on him, which I think is a really important distinction that I think fans take for granted. I look at the amount of injuries that team has been able to overcome. Keaton Slovis being able to find this guy and throw him into the lineup, the amount of injuries that team has had. And Steve, you know, people think about USC as this enormous brand and a team that should be winning national championship. All well and good, and that's fine, and I'm not here to disagree with that. But, you know, I've been to all 12 campuses in the Pac-12. I've seen what everyone's facility is. And there's an interesting comment that Clay had made where he said the commitment right now, and I know Mike Bone made his comments, but the commitment for this program to be a winning team is now here. And I think that's like a subtle remark that people didn't necessarily catch on and like think about what he actually meant. It's a hotbed in Southern California, Steve, to go and get top flight recruits. Everyone knows that. But I would put USC's facilities anywhere from like at best eighth in the conference and more realistically probably 10th in the league. And you and I both know, you're talking about 18, 19-year-old kids, like 17-year-old kids. They care about those types of things.
Oh, yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if you see a little bit of a shift in some of the bells and whistles that USC will have at its disposal over the next couple of years.
You know, I know the story is a couple months old, but you had a chance to get some one-on-one time with former Duck, let's say current hero, Keenan Lowe, who was a key guy on those great Duck teams, 2011 through 2014. We know the story about disarming that student. You got to speak to him face-to-face, Mike. What were some of the takeaways you got from that talk with Lowe, who I remember as a player kind of personified Scott Frost's no-block, no-rock, team-first philosophy?
He totally was one of the, and I appreciate you asking about it because it was one of the coolest things that I've gotten to do in my career, to sit down with someone like Keenan. He's a remarkable person. And I think if you talk to his teammates, I remember talking to Mark Helfrich about him and, you know, Chip Kelly had conversations. I was actually down at UCLA right after we released that feature and Chip's comments about him. He's a different dude. And I think his actions, and clearly a leader on the football field, clearly a guy that you wanted to be around and an awesome teammate. But the impact that he's having right now on that school is really unique. And I think all of us think about, hey, what would I do in that situation if there was a gunman? Look, I think there's a small segment of the population that would run. I think there's a segment of the population that feels like they would go and disarm the student with the gun or any person with the gun. I got to tell you, though, Steve, I think the percentage of people that would respond the way Keenan did, not only disarming the student, but giving that kid an understanding of the situation, reading the situation, and giving him a hug, I think that that group is so small on the planet, and I'm glad Keenan was there. I'm glad no one was hurt, and I really do think he is. You use the term hero. I would agree with you. He is as special a person as we've had in this conference, and it's a testament to the job that Oregon Athletics has done. And I know it's not Mario's guy per se, but Mario Cristobal did have him speak. But just the legacy in that program and taking student athletes and making them men. And I know he played for Chip and Health, but it really is a very cool story.
Yeah, folks, you can check out Mike's Twitter feed and archive it as we continue with Mike Yam. Before we get into some of the specifics, let's do some marketing and promo. I mean, we're just about 24 hours away. Programming-wise for the Pac-12 Network, Mike, what can we see coverage-wise, and who's going to be with you in Santa Clara?
Getting ready to go after it, man. 4 o'clock Pacific time, we'll do the pregame show. It's pretty cool. The game's on ABC, but there's only one place you get a pregame show for the Pac-12 championship game. It's actually on Pac-12 Network. They won't do that on ABC.
Right.
And when the game is over, we will go on air for a postgame show for about an hour. Typically in these situations, we usually get winning coach and obviously reaction from both locker rooms. Some players will stop by with us, but the mayor of Eugene, Coach Aliotti, he's going to be on set, Nigel Burton and Yogi Roth. Will be joining me. So really looking forward to a big day.
It's going to be fun. All right, I'm going to play hypothetical. And, of course, you know, everybody here wants to play spoiler. So say Utah beats Oregon. And I know you've made some really substantial cases for the Utes to be the fourth team if the three unbeatens hold serve. So be it what you tweeted out about the history of the number five team in the final rankings or the resume for this particular Utes team. If they win, why do you think it should be them in the national semifinal?
Yeah, to me, it's not much of an argument. I know, you know, Rob Mullins just says the conversation's pretty heated and it's a debated topic. Look, Utah has been sitting in front of Oklahoma and Baylor every single week that these rankings have come out. So to me, the committee has said, we like Utah better. And now you give them a top 25 win. I don't think there's much of a difference between 7 and 13. Like, if you start talking about those types of teams, it's pretty negligible in my mind. So there's nothing in my head that says if Oklahoma wins that they should go into the playoff over Utah. The committee is like Utah better, and a win against Oregon would solidify it in my mind. They have dominated teams. That 8-game winning streak, they're beating teams by 29 points, a little more than 29 points per game. No team in the country has that margin over that stretch. And Oklahoma has been just barely getting by over these last couple weeks, on top of the fact that, you know, the turnovers have been an issue. Look, I've done the mock selection, Steve. They'll use the metrics for sure. They'll talk about strength of schedule. They'll talk about, you know, defensive numbers and all those types of things. If it's close, and I do think it's close for that committee, the football people are just going to lean on what they see. And what they've seen right now is a complete Utah squad. So if Utah is able to win, and I don't even think that's an easy matchup for them against Oregon, you know, the Ducks obviously are a formidable team, but if Utah wins and those unbeaten hold serve, I think you're talking about the Utes of that fourth squad.
You know, obviously on the other side, you have the Ducks who've been in kind of an odd spot. They've had the North wrapped up for so long, and then after Arizona State, you don't have to worry about the playoff, and, you know, technically, they could have lost the Civil War, and they still would have been in this game. And now, if they lose and Utah makes the playoffs, they go to the Rose Bowl anyway. I mean, what's been your read and kind of the buzz at the network about Oregon's approach to a big game under, I guess, unique circumstances?
Yeah, this is still, it's huge, and I'm glad you bring up that Rose Bowl because it's still in play, and they have the ability to control their own destiny to get that. They win, and they're going to be in that matchup in Pasadena, and I think about Mario Cristobal with a rose in between his teeth and just kind of what that would actually signal for the Ducks. Pac-12 champions, a Rose Bowl appearance, potentially a Rose Bowl win against maybe Wisconsin or Penn State, whoever is able to grab that spot. You know, this program is trending in the right direction. I think we all understand that. And the ability that Mario has had to turn this around because of the effort of the staff in terms of recruiting, to me, is really special. I look at it as a balanced squad in the top 16 right now in total offense and defense. This, once again, this is not an easy game. It's supposed to rain down here, Steve. 100% chance of it's going to rain the entire day. And I think Mother Nature kind of becomes a little bit of an equalizer in this game. More than 200 career starts for that offensive line. It's strength on strength. I still think Kel Wright in special teams and return, field position, that might be the difference. Maybe one or just two explosive plays could be, you know, what puts one team on top of the other.
I got to wrap with Oregon State, yeah, because 2 years ago when Gary Anderson left, I mean, they lost their last three games. They allowed, I think it was 160 combined points. And then enter Jonathan Smith in last year. Some positives, but they were still just awful on defense. Then this year, for them to win three straight Pac-12 road games, yeah, they blew the coup game, tight civil war, but for them to have been in two different spots to almost make a bowl game after two disastrous seasons, how impressive are you viewing the turnaround that Coach Smith and his staff have engineered?
Awesome. I don't know what other word to use besides that. You're right, and I'd take it a step further, the Hawaii matchup. Imagine they close out that one. We would have been talking about them as a bowl eligible team. You know, there's that famous Bobby Bowden quote, year one, lose big. Year two, lose close. Year three, win small. Year four, win big. And right now, they're on that path. They've exceeded expectations. Jonathan Smith clearly is the right guy for this job. And had they been a bowl-eligible team, I think Kyle Whittingham's your coach of the year in the conference. But if Oregon State was a bowl-eligible team, I'm not going to lie, Steve. Like, I think maybe Coach Smith might have taken that, taken home that award.
No, that's realistic, and I spoke with Mike Parker about that last week, and we all seem to be on the same page. Folks, he's Mike Yam. 4 o'clock tomorrow, the pregame on the Pac-12 Network with Coach Aliotti and Yogi. Then a postgame, he'll have the thoughts and feelings from the locker room on Twitter, @Mike_Yam. Mike, always a pleasure. Travel safe, and enjoy, and look forward to talking some hoops down the road.
Absolutely, Steve. You're the best, man. I always appreciate the invite.
All right. Have a good one. Mike Yam. Awesome. Good stuff. And, yeah, like he said, the network on a Friday is not having a pregame show. So if you want to kind of get wired in early, starting at 4 o'clock, he'll have Coach Aliotti, obviously a pretty good guy to talk about Oregon and defense, and you got two pretty darn good ones there. Nick giving me the But anyway, gang, appreciate Mike's time, and tomorrow morning, by the way, courtesy of Bi-Mart, we'll be doing Duck Talk Live at the IHOP at Gateway. And if you come on down between, normally around 7:30 up until 9 o'clock, and you say you're there for the show, free pancakes!
Three of them!
And we will be doing a little Duck Talk program. As a matter of fact, I just told you, it was Duck Talk Live. If you can't make it down, we'll be broadcasting live on 96.1 KZL. And it's going to be Le Grand Finale. And our 12th edition, because obviously with last week, the thought of partying and filling up on Thanksgiving and then showing up the day before was like, yeah, let's do it for the championship game. And for the first time since I've been in radio for nearly 30 years, I made a suggestion and somebody listened. So we'll be there at the IHOP at Gateway tomorrow for Duck Talk Live. Like to see you down there. Either way, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come back. We'll have an update. And then we'll talk some Seahawks and some more Ducks with Aaron Fentress of The Athletic coming at you next. 95.3 The Score. California
Love. Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
guys that are on this team that are seniors that have been through a ton, tremendous competitors that are out here that are working really, really hard and working together. That's one of the biggest things that I've seen this week so far is that everyone's coming together and doing it together and as best we can out on the field working together at times, you know, iron sharpens iron.
Andy Avalos on his seniors reaching and preparing for a game like this, which obviously, if you think about it, especially those like Troy Dye, who, you know, the first year he played was the worst year in recent Oregon history since, 1991? So it was 2016. I mean, they weren't even within a whiff of a game like this that year, obviously under one-and-done Taggart last year as well, now to make it this far. By the way, iron sharpens iron. I like that one. I got to be honest, I never heard that one. All right, let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, because, folks, we've reached that time on a Thursday where we could get our weekly view from the North. Now, doing his fine journalistic work for The Athletic, he's got a very symmetric trip plan this week, heading south to Santa Clara, tomorrow's Pac-12 title game, then Sunday, Seahawks at Rams. You can follow on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how's it going? How was the holiday at Shea Fentress?
Well, sorry.
Uh-oh.
Sorry about that, man. I've been battling a cold for a week. It's been crazy. But Thanksgiving was good because the Bears won. And they're back in it. And they play again tonight. And if they win tonight, they're even more in it. So I got all this hope coursing through my veins right now. Feeling pretty good. But I can't get over this cold.
Man, so, it seems like a fair trade-off. The Bears in the playoffs for your health.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I know you follow Seinfeld a little bit, the quote from Seinfeld, it's hope that's killing me. So I saw you did a radio spot, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, British Columbia. So
yeah.
Since when are you analyzing NHL hockey behind my back? And were you talking NFL or college football? I was kind of curious.
Seahawks. Seahawks are big.
Okay.
They've had me on a few times talking about the Seahawks. Yeah, it was kind of funny. When they first called me, I was like, Canada, what? So, I've gone on that show a few times.
All right. Makes sense. I piqued my curiosity. Seahawks, beyond the big win that puts them now on the NFC West lead, you know, when you think about it, the most success, the Patriots, but Belichick really hasn't worked with one GM. I was reading Seattle's about to make the playoffs 8 times in 10 years with Carroll as coach, John Schneider as GM. Before that, they'd only made it 10 times ever. Is it legit to just acknowledge that these guys have been a remarkable team?
Oh, no doubt. You know, the fact that they had to turn over an elite defense and did so while never going worse than 9-7 during that process, and that was 1 year they missed the playoffs, is extremely impressive. Now, you do have the franchise, you know, caliber quarterback, future Hall of Famer, and Russell Wilson to help sort of ease that transition. But that's tough to do when you go from being a Super Bowl contender to being back to a Super Bowl contender with mostly new cast members other than the quarterback. I mean, even if you have an elite quarterback, that still can be a tough trick to pull off. But, you know, Carroll said a few years ago, I remember he said, look, you know, we built the team that won the last Super Bowl. You got to trust us that we might be able to build, you know, another, you know, good defense, another good enough offense to be contenders again, and here they are.
No doubt about it. It's a doff of the cap. I feel like periodically we talk about the running game, and they just always have kind of a different personality. There's been injuries. Now Rashad Penny was huge at Philly. Last week he was big. Carson's going to go over 1,000 yards, and they dominated a really good run defense last week. So it's December. I don't have to tell you, but how huge is it that they're finding their groove on the ground?
Oh yeah, this is what Pete Carroll is all about, and it drives the analytics folks nuts. Just every day or every week, you just see these guys just ripped on Pete Carroll and how awful it is that indefensible that he doesn't throw the ball more with an elite quarterback, and the stats say and the analytics say it's more efficient and blah 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 blah, and all this nonsense. And like, Pierre doesn't care about that crap. He wants to run first to protect his defense and protect his quarterback. And when they need to, you know, in a game where it's a shootout, they'll let Russell throw it more often. But if they don't need to, there's no point in doing it. And when you're rushing for 200 yards in a game against a really good run defense that the Vikings have, I think they were top 10 in rushing, if not higher, in rushing defense, then why would you not explore that to help every other aspect of your game? And if not for the rushing attack in that game, I don't know if they win, because Wilson wasn't really on until that 60-yard touchdown to Moore, which was somewhat a weird coverage choice by the Vikings on that play. He had been struggling, you know, and of course he had the volleyball batted interception for 6-6. So the running game really made things happen in the game. And the same thing at Philly. Like, he struggled at Philly to throw the ball. I mean, there was a drop touchdown by Metcalf, but again, Penny had a big game, had the big touchdown, ended up being the icer for them late in the game. So this is what Carroll wants to do. He wants to run it, control it, and force turnovers. And it's got them to 10-2.
I'm talking with Aaron Fentress of The Athletic. Obviously, all secondaries compared to the Legion of Boom, and there was that little breakdown to the to Laquon Treadwell last week, but that Athletic interception by Flowers was insane. You got Shaquille Griffin on the other side. I know earlier in the year they lost Tedrick Thompson for the season, and, you know, it's funny, their position coach, I remember when he was playing in the national title game with Virginia Tech 20 years ago, but how well is that group playing right now?
Very well, you know, and the addition of Diggs from Detroit has really helped sort of solidify the back end there, because, you know, this isn't a Pro Bowl guy, this isn't a Hall of Fame guy, this isn't Earl Thomas, but he's like a poor man's Earl Thomas. He's like the same size, he flies around, wants to hit people, he's a ball hawk. He's just smart, and he doesn't make mistakes in coverage. He's difficult to fool. He comes up and hits. Man, he came up and laid the hat on, I can't remember who it was, on Minnesota's tight end. He tried to get a little cute dancing, trying to make a juke, and all of a sudden the Diggs came in and just smacked him. He had the pick, the big pick against the 49ers. So he's been a huge addition for them, because, again, it's just you want, at the end of the day, you want people who are smart and not going to blow coverage, and going to be where they need to be. And that way you hopefully can take away big plays, although they gave up the one. And then that helps helps your defense, because the defense is not dominant. So you don't want to give up too many big plays. You want to make people work for it and hope they make mistakes. And then if you're running the ball well, and with Russell Wilson, you're going to make fewer mistakes. That gives you a chance to win in the fourth quarter.
I got to ask you one NBA question, because you're up in Portland. You're a season ticket holder. And, of course, the Blazers added Carmelo Anthony. And it's just been interesting to see him just working to fit in. I mean, God, last night they had four guys score more than 20 points, including Whiteside. They'd hit a bad stretch. So, I mean, what's been the buzz about the addition of Melo and, I guess, kind of improving this team and holding down the fort until, I guess, hopefully they get Nurk and Collins back?
Yeah. You know, 2 years ago I was all the way in on bringing him in when they were trying to get him before OKC got him. I thought he would be a perfect fit because – you know, at that time he was a lot better than he is now. He was only 33 then, and I thought, you know, if you have another guy on the team who can score at will, that would take some pressure off of Dame and CJ. But then 2 years later, after things didn't work out at OKC, after Houston let him go, it was like, is this guy really the guy anymore that you would want? And I was skeptical. Like, a 3-point shoot, like, if he can't shoot threes, what good is he? Because he doesn't play D. And so it's like, what, I mean, you really can't find someone better. So I had my reservations, I'm not going to lie, but man, he has just been great for them. Like, he started out slowly, and then he's just been lights out in terms of scoring and being efficient in scoring. He hasn't been selfish. And I remember the knocks at the time when Portland was talking to him, and this, I wish people would do a better job in this, is that people kept saying, oh, he would be a cancer and tear up the locker room. Carmelo Anthony has never been a cancer that I know of. Like, I don't know if I've never heard anyone say they didn't like Carmelo or like being around Carmelo, like playing with Carmelo. Now, was he a black hole at times? Yeah, he was. But at the same time, did the Knicks have anyone else he should have shared the ball with? I mean, you're a Knicks fan. Like, who else did they ever have that he should have been deferring to? Like, it's like, okay, so he's kind of a black hole. But just because a guy's a black hole on one team doesn't mean he's going to be on another. Right, these things can change and evolve. And if you say, okay, you're on this team, you're our third option, and he accepts that, which he has, then you're golden. And I always felt like he'd be smart enough to accept that. But so far, it's working out great. I mean, we'll see how long it lasts. But man, having another guy out there who can fill it up and take pressure off of those two guys is huge.
Yeah, when the Knicks were going 21-61, I don't remember it being his fault because Jose Calderon wasn't doing his job. A couple final thoughts for Aaron Fentress. Let's get to Oregon, Pac-12 title game, facing the best defense in the conference, off a game against a shaky Beaver defense where, as you wrote, the offense really only scored 2 touchdowns and a field goal. Weekly, you go back and look at the film. We know they got talent. We know they got firepower. But what stands out to you that's been, I guess, so inconsistent?
I don't know. I thought they had cleared this hurdle. And then the last 3 games, even the Arizona game was a bit disjointing. But the last 2, it's just like, what is going on? There's too much talent on that offense to be that erratic. And you look at an Oregon State team that has not had a good defense really much this season. They gave up 55 at Washington State, I think. Or maybe that was home. I can't remember where that was. But, you know, and then you go out there and you didn't have one legitimate offensive touchdown drive. I mean, the last touchdown to Beaver Lakeel was set up by a turnover. You had the kickoff return for a touchdown. And even the touchdown pass to Johnson was set up by something.
Punt return.
Yeah, so it wasn't a long drive or anything. It's like you can't put together a drive against these guys. And it's the running game. I mean, they had a couple nice runs. I remember someone telling me, you're nitpicking because you're trying to take away the 2 best runs, like they didn't happen. And I'm like, well, yeah, the die run happened and the Herbert run happened, and they count in the rushing total, but they didn't lead to any points because both drives died because of the inconsistency in the run game. So, yeah, we can give them credit for those yards, but what does it matter if you break a 35-yard run and then rush for 1 and 2 and throw incomplete pass and punt? It doesn't mean anything.
Right.
And that's the problem. And they had a 1st and goal at the 10, ran for two, and then threw the incomplete pass where Herbert threw it 50 feet over the head of a 6'5" receiver, and you kick a field goal and you miss it. So that's where the inconsistency kills you. And now they're going up against a monster defense. It's just like, I can't. I've been trying to convince myself how they can win this game, and then this rainstorm is supposed to come in. And so, okay, here's how I think they can win. All right, you ready for this?
Sure.
Okay. So the good news is they have a really good defense that can keep them in it. So Utah's not going to run away. It's not going to be 33-10 or anything ridiculous like that. You know, the defense will keep them in it while the offense tries to figure it out. The offense, I cannot imagine any scenario where they rush for 100 yards in this game. This is exactly the type of game they're not going to rush for 100 yards in. Utah gives up 56 on the ground. It's going to be raining. I don't think the quick passing game is going to be huge because – I think Utah's going to key in on that. Where they're going to try and have to have success is they're going to have to be able to go downfield and make some plays. And USC showed the roadmap for that because in USC's win over Utah, all of their points, all 30 of them, were generated by the deep ball. They threw 3 deep ball touchdowns. Well, the one was 29 yards, but they were basically thanks to the third-string quarterback who got in because the freshman kid got injured, like the first drive. He just throwing it up for his guys to go get it. And Pittman and those other guys were making plays on the ball and scoring. Even their drive to end the game of 30 was set up by a deep ball to Pittman and then a PI in the end zone, and then they ran it in. So, you know, if they can get Johnny Johnson, Juwan Johnson deep and make some plays downfield, I think they have a shot. If they're trying to march and run and short pass it, it ain't going to happen.
No, they had 3 touchdown passes, 77, 31, and I think 29 yards. And that kid Matt Fink came in and became the second coming of Tom Brady.
Right, exactly.
All right, well, you answered my last question already into your crystal ball. So enjoy. Should be a fun trip to NoCal, SoCal, and back. Folks, you could follow him on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Travel safe, sir. Appreciate your time. We'll catch up next week.
Awesome, man. Talk to you later.
All right, take it easy. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Yeah, you know what? We're running a little tardy. I want to come back so we have enough time to lightning things. So we'll wrap up crunch time on a Thursday with the lightning round next. 95.3 The Score.
Giddy up.
Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
I don't give a damn about his apology. I think the suspension was appropriate. I think that's all this should be. I'm not going to call for him to be fired and stuff like that. People make mistakes, as ignorant as that mistake was. The fact of the matter is, it made absolutely no sense what he said, and it showed to some degree where his mind was going. I don't know how in God's name something like that could come out of your mouth.
It's a pretty good point. Stephen A. talking about Tim Ryan. Who was on KMBR and made that just really dingbatish comment about Lamar Jackson. But a story for another day, nonetheless. All right, let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline as we welcome you back to the home stretch of Crunch Time on a Thursday. Because when we wrap our first hour on this day, we do something, well, that goes like this.
You'll have to excuse my friend. He's a little slow.
Luckily, I have prepared for such an event. The lightning round!
It's our Thursday lightning round. Championship weekend coming round as 2019's winding down. Till fine down still, a stupid clown. Yes!
What?
I was waiting on that
one. I appreciate the burn, but it had nothing to do with everything we were doing.
It really didn't.
I, just, you know, you're
I
just
was saving
it.
I was saving it since yesterday.
B plus.
I was saying, I got to get credit for tucking on one and keeping it in my hip pocket.
Let's get started with the lightning round. The Clay Helton tenure has been a strange one for USC. In his first two full seasons, they went to the Rose Bowl. They played in an all-time classic against Penn State. And 2 years later, they were 5-7. He was placed on the hot seat for what felt like a permanent basis, even having to play his third-string true freshman quarterback this year. They won 8 games. There's a small, small chance that USC can get selected to the Rose Bowl this year, too. But USC hired a new athletic director, Mike Bone, and that just like when there's a new GM or owner that takes over in the NFL, the new guy always wants to get going with his guy. It's why many figured Helton would be out at SC this month. After all, he held a top 5 spot on CoachesHotSeat.com for the last 2 years. Which is why the news that USC kept Helton, at least for the time being, as their head coach is so shocking. There were rumors of Suburban Meyer bringing Bob Stoops out of retirement, whispers of Chris Peterson following Sark's path from UW to USC. Now, I'm sure USC was asking around about new head coaches, and it might not necessarily have been the worst decision to keep him around, given that Helton has actually shown what he can do at SC, and it's kind of good sometimes. I don't know. USC, keeping Clay Helton is blank.
Temporary. I couldn't think of a word, because if they were really excited and he was Bone's guy, or he would have given him more than just the 1 year kind of nod. Otherwise, I think he'd be out. So this is about as temporary as it gets.
More fallout from this madness of the coaching carousel is Washington State extending Mike Leach through the 2024 season. This would make his tenure up in the Palouse 13 years, as the Pirate is 55-46 in his 8 years so far with the Cougs. Leach reportedly met with Ole Miss earlier this week, and that ends up equaling one of two things: that the coach is taking a new job, or he's getting a raise at his current job. We pretty much saw this with Nebraska. Scott Frost got an extension after FSU fired Willie Taggart. I mean, not a known fact or anything, but you can assume that someone probably called and asked Frost to come back to Florida. Anyways, well, Leach has built up a Wazoo program that was not very good during the mid-2000s before he took over, and now Wazoo was a simplistically frustrating team that throws the ball more than any other in the country. Could Leach and Wazoo maybe both do better with somebody else? Maybe, but for now, they're stuck with each other for about 5 years. Mike Leach's extension at Wazoo is blank.
Confusing? Because they seem to have taken a step back, and if Coach Smith would have punted the ball, they might not even have made a bowl game. But I guess when you're Washington State and you're not a high-profile program, and he keeps you kind of on the national stage, he does have value. I hope he fails, because I can't stand him.
The MLB hot stove is looking like it will actually be hot this year. Players are being signed, and more importantly, players that have draft picks tied to them are also being signed, and pitchers are getting some big money. Zach Wheeler, of all people, got $118 million.
Jeez.
And now it seems like the big names are coming next. Gerrit Cole is the biggest fish that's available. Steven Strasburg, the World Series MVP, is out there. And Mad Bum is just about the most perfect pitcher that will ever pitch. He's going to be the true steal of the free agent class. Thems are the rules. The teams that are lining up for these three guys are some big spenders like the Yankees, who are looking at Cole and Strasburg. The Reds are seemingly all in on Mad Bum. There's also the Angels and the Dodgers who want to make a splash. The race is on who cashes in first. The first pitcher to sign will be Cole, Strasburger, Mad Bum.
Anthony Rendon.
No.
He is my most prized free agent possession.
That is the wrong answer. So Cole, this was not Strasburger,
who?
Mad Bum.
I'll tell you what, since the other two are viewed as A-ticket guys and Bumgarner, still the semi-jury is out, I'm going to go Bummy.
That's probably the right answer. According to CNN, there is, quote, an unusually cold and wet potato harvest season that might lead to a French fry shortage in the United States. That's right. Those delicious, salty, crunchy, yet soft planks of deliciousness might be less available because of some cold weather. The harvest is down across all of the U.S. and Canada, and it's the lowest it's been in a decade. Potato processors are scrambling to find suitable replacements to be able to keep up with demand. Now, this could be a major problem. Fries are delicious. They're a great snack. They're not the healthiest snack, but
I love fries.
A snack is a snack. They could be going away, Steve.
No.
It's not just fries. We're talking hash browns, potato wedges, baked potatoes, sweet potatoes, tater tots, all of it. Tater tots, right, Steve? I know you're not a beef burger guy, but even with your veggie burgers that you get at Sam's Place, you always get fries. You were mad one time you got fries.
Forgot to get tater tots because I stole one of yours and they were yummy.
They're perfect. The French fry shortage that might hit the U.S. is a big little or no deal.
It's the biggest thing that's ever happened in the history. That's like my one kind of guilty pleasure. And to me, my guilty pleasure is I buy the organic fries and I bake them at home. But
you're not cultivating your own potatoes. Potatoes in your backyard.
Not yet. I love me some French fries. I'm going to make this personal. I'm not thinking about society or anybody else. This is one of the biggest deals you've ever brought up in the history of the lightning round.
Nobody's talking about it. There's a potato shortage.
Somebody just says with a potato shortage, what about vodka?
No. That's double bad for you.
That is.
That's double. Those are the two things you enjoy in life.
I would say that's of the just non-basics of the selective treats. Vodka and French fries is both. That's top 10. They're both playoff teams. All right. Looking ahead to the 4 o'clock hour. I can't believe how fast the 3 o'clock hour went by. What do we have? Oh, Sterling at the bottom, and then we're going to talk about the new Oregon Lottery sports app as Nick and I. What'd you call it again? I like your nickname.
The Stephen Nick 3-pick.
All right. That's going to be coming up at 4:45. So, yeah, we got things going on. Sports Talk is next. 95.3, The Score.
But, man, y'all got to coconut up.